Hour number two on this Monday morning, Darren McFarland. It's Steve Lehman, News Channel 5, alongside Willie Donnie coming back with the team. They're asking you to go out there and meet them at Signature Airport, 801 Hangar Lane. Be out there a little bit before 1 o'clock this afternoon as they get back from Denver, Colorado. Wrapping up that series last night against the Avalanche. Should know something here, I would say, soon. And obviously when we find out day and time, we'll pass along when round two series will begin. We have our suspicions. We have our guesses. But when it's official, we'll certainly pass it along.
You think they're waiting for the games tonight? Or do you think we'll hear before then?
Well, you got two left, and they both play tonight. I would say somebody will wrap it up tonight, right? And if I was guessing, somebody will wrap it up, and somebody's going game seven.
Yep.
I doubt they both close out.
I think
out
Boston
tonight.
Closes it out. I think Washington, Columbus head to a game seven.
I think you're right. I think that's where I would lean.
Which means at least one series is going to finish on Wednesday in the first round.
That's right. They try to typically get a round over before they start the next. Doesn't always work out that way. They may start the day before game seven the next night.
What I could see is game seven first Wednesday, followed by maybe Sharks Vegas. Doubleheader to wrap up round one, move on to round two, but we'll see.
Our next guest, Dan Shanka. Love this guy. Been talking to him for a long time. He's been in the business around what's going to take place on Thursday. Yeah, the NFL draft is Thursday down in Dallas, and Dan Shanka joins us. He's been in those war rooms. He's with Our Lads Scouting Service. Dan, how you doing? Good morning.
Doing real good, Darren. It won't be long now. I mean, you can almost see Dallas from here. So it'll be interesting to see what happens on Thursday night.
You know every draft, Dan, is different, and sometimes certain positions, it's a great year for that. Certain years, it's a horrible year for that position. What are a couple positions that stand out to you? I'm not saying what they're going to take, because sometimes you just take them because you need them and you force a pick, even though it's probably you shouldn't have been doing that at that particular year because that position was down. Maybe a couple positions that you feel like are rich. It's talented. There's a lot of talent there. Maybe a couple positions that you think this is not the year to really go for that position.
Well, I'll tell you what, Darren, a running back is really a strong area this year. I think that, they're loaded. I mean, just golly, all the way through the, fifth round and maybe even the sixth, seventh round, you've got those third down type of backs that they've really got good hands that can make you miss in the open field, and they might not be able to take that pounding between the tackles on a regular basis, but boy, I tell you what, they're really good. So I think, that's a strong area. And then it kind of from there, wide receivers, second and third round area are really good, and linebackers, I think, in that area are really good. There's a few at the top that we like, in Edmonds and Rokan Smith from Georgia, Landry, an outside linebacker from Boston College, Vander Esch from Boise State is, and Evans, could go late in that first round, which is kind of where Tennessee's, picking. So there may be another linebacker in their horizon.
Certainly that's a position of need. How many running backs do you anticipate? You just said it's a strong year, a strong class. Yeah. For that position, how many do you think are going to go early?
Oh, early? Well, I tell you, I don't know if there'll be more than one going in the first round.
Really?
Depends on those quarterbacks, and things. Then people start panicking because, hey, there's really – the tackles are really, really weak this year. So McGlinchey's going to get grabbed, and maybe Williams from Texas or – Miller from UCLA, probably lower in the first round. McGlinchey's probably going to go, mid or maybe a little higher. Just like I said, if somebody needs a tackle, they're going to go ahead and grab them because they're just not – it's just very, 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 very – about as bad as I've probably seen it, So they're going to – and everybody starts – then all of a sudden the dominoes start because they start – everybody starts reaching stuff because they're afraid they're not going to get their guy. And then we have trades and chaos.
Which is sometimes good for what we do. How do you think teams are going to handle Lamar Jackson? Is he going to get taken in the first round?
You know, that's probably the million, well, multi-million dollar question in his case, because there's no question that, you know, his athletic ability is tremendous, his, you know, ability to run with the ball, but you don't do that in the NFL. And, you know, you can just look right there in your backyard with Marcus Mariota, who, you know, he's probably as good a runner as any quarterback has been in the last several years, but, you know, he knows he's got to stay in the pocket and throw, which he does. And we love Marcus when he came out. We thought he was a great draft pick. We think he's going to continue to advance and be a really good quarterback. But I think, you know, he's way ahead of where Lamar Jackson is when, you know, Lamar's coming out this year. And he's got kind of a buggy whip delivery, which is not always a real good thing for a quarterback. You want a more compact to get that ball out. And then and he's made a lot of wide-open throws in that spread offense because, you know, as soon as he starts running that line of scrimmage, here comes the defense. Even though you're taught, don't leave your guy, deep as the deepest, wide as the widest, do not leave defensive backs, and they end up leaving because they see Lamar coming, and then there's a wide-open receiver running downfield, and they'll toss it down there to him and get a touchdown. So I think that somebody that's in love with him will go ahead and take him in the first round, but we got him going in the second, but you know, it would not surprise me at all if him, you know, going in that first round area, lower first round, mid to late.
I mentioned you've been in those war rooms. The Titans select 25th in the first round. Typically, when you're late in the first round, when you're back there, do you think it's a good idea to stand pat, move up, or move down? In your opinion.
Well, you know, it all depends. I think you look at each team differently because they all have got different needs and they've got, you know, their best player available. Now, when I was in Philadelphia, we were usually picking toward the bottom, you know, down in that area. And we only had one early pick in my 7 years there, and that was with Donovan McNabb. And of course, that's when all hell broke loose up in New York, and they thought we should take Ricky Williams, who happened to be the second running back on our board. But anyway, you know, Donovan was the only early round guy. The rest of our guys were late. So, and we stood pat, you know, for the most of the time that I was there, and we got good players that really helped and started and were Pro Bowl kind of guys. So, you know, I think it all depends. Now, it depends also, you got tight end, if that's a need, if that's perceived as a need, you're going to have your choice probably of at least two of the three really good tight ends. If linebacker, you know, I think obviously Rashad Evans is going to be there, you know, so there's quite a few areas there that there's going to be some really good players.
Dan Shaka covers the draft and really good at this stuff. He was in draft rooms with the Eagles, Redskins, and Chiefs during his career in the NFL. Dan, give me the sense within those war rooms or within team facilities this week, because I imagine here on Monday of draft week, most, if not all, of the work is pretty much put to bed. So what's the jockeying like even before you get to Thursday night and guys start coming off the board in terms of deciding what you're going to do heading into draft night?
Well, the scouts are on the phone talking to the different teams to see if they're going to be willing to trade because there's some teams that, you know, just don't like to trade or what have you. But you put together a little matrix and say, hey, yeah, Atlanta, they're interested in doing a trade and so on. So you're working on that. You're kind of putting together your free agents, your undrafted free agents list and things like that. You know, if you don't think this guy's going to get drafted or you got that, you know, on the lower part of your board, and you're still massaging your board because medical information comes in, last minute information, security checks, all that stuff is still coming in. And then the fun part at night is you do your mock drafts. The coaches and the scouts get together and they do their mock drafts, you know, and I always enjoyed that, but that's the only time we ever did a mock draft is the last couple of days before the, and then, you know, heck, you're in the submarine, I call it, all the time. You don't really know what's going on out around there. Now, that was, hey, before Twitter and all this other stuff. But we basically, you know, we never listened to anybody, and they don't now, you know, they don't listen to, hey, their scouts have been paid all year to get the information together. The general manager's seen these guys. The director of player personnel have seen these guys, the college directors and everything. So the coaches, you know, and all that stuff is up there. But you still can kind of massage it a little bit, not drastically. Although one year, the year we took Donovan, we were all set, you know, had the board set and everything. And a couple coaches come in and say, you know, we've been looking over these things. Akili Smith might be a guy we should consider. And those two guys are out of the league, by the way, now. We kind of kicked them out the door, you know what I mean?
But you guys were right, not the coaches.
Right. The crazy stuff happens, you know. And hopefully nothing drastic will happen to any of these top guys. Like, they do something stupid, you know, the night before the draft or at the draft or this week or something, because they're going to cost themselves a lot of money if they – you know, do something crazy. So, no, but right now, all those other aforementioned things you do, but it's just kind of you get to breathe a little bit, but then you wire up that intensity again for Thursday night.
You mentioned that during your time in Philadelphia, largely you guys were picking down around where the Titans are, 25th mm-hmm. going into Thursday night. So John Robinson, Mike Vrabel, everybody over there at St. Thomas Sports Park, how many different scenarios, as they're going through the mock drafts and things, are they preparing for? I mean, is that the type of thing where you kind of have a guy that you really want, and at 25 you're just hoping that he gets to you? Are you playing out five or six different scenarios of what's going to happen? Or are they kind of like the rest of us, and they sit back on Thursday night and watch what happens with the first 22, 23, 24 picks, and then they see what's left to take?
Well, what happens is you have your top, you have your 150 board that's in the front where you got your stack of 150 players. Some teams use 100, some, but whatever it is, it's that from that amount of players, you're going to get your draft, okay, you put up there. So as these guys come off, you peel off their card or their nameplate, and then you stick it up underneath the team that took them, and then you might have a guy that you really like, and your scouts have graded this guy very high. You might see him sticking up there, and you'll take that guy. If he's there and he comes down 25, and you're going to take that guy because you wouldn't have graded him, you know, up there in the top, say he's in the 15 or in the high teens or what have you. He's going to be your guy. So I think that say, for instance, everything comes off according to, you know, all organizations, they're not going to have the same stack. Everybody's different. So, but what you do before things get to you, you have your top, say, five players right there that you feel like are going to be in that area. And then you'll talk about those as the draft comes closer to you and things, and the selections come closer. And then you've made that decision. You got it down to three, you got it two down to one. Say, hey, this guy's there, boom, he's our guy, you know. So, and then you get the phone calls about, hey, you want to trade? We want to trade up, and they got to listen to, you know, Robinson's got to listen to that noise too for a while. But that's, you know, it always seems like you get a call or two about trades during that time too, especially if somebody wants a quarterback, they didn't get it at the top, they might go for Mason Rudolph. Say, hey, let's talk to Tennessee about, you know, trading up, you know, from our spot up to Tennessee and give them whatever. So that's always in the mix too.
We were looking last night on News Channel 5 at the mock drafts of who people have going to the Titans at number 25. And Dan, it seemed like by and large, there's a consensus that the Titans are going to go defense, probably a linebacker, pass rusher, or maybe a combination of the two. But there's not a great consensus of who that guy actually is. Do you agree that that is the biggest need for the Titans going into this draft? And if so, who would be your guy? Best case scenario if he's left on the board for them to select at 25.
Well, I think it could very well be the biggest need. We got it in our guide as the biggest need. Defensive line, some help in the defensive line area, you know, would help. I know in the mock draft that we did for our guide, we put Leighton Vander Esch from Boise State, who is a I don't want to say this is an Urlacher guy, because Urlacher is just a tremendous athlete that, you know, is just a rare player. But Van Ness, he's only played 1 year, whereas Urlacher played his, you know, played out his career basically at New Mexico. But Van Ness had a great year this past year. He's a very athletic guy, around 6'4", 250 and change. Can really run. So I'd probably stick with Van Ness right now. But he may be gone. You know, he may be gone before the Titans. And if he is, you know, I would certainly switch gears and look maybe for a defensive tackle or maybe another linebacker, maybe like Evans from Alabama was graded higher. Maybe he's the guy that John Robinson wants.
So they really don't peak, Dan? I mean, they don't. I mean, it was different when the internet wasn't like it is today. They really don't look at our lads before the draft. They don't peak at some of these mocks before the draft.
All the teams subscribe to our guide. And in fact, I had a call one time. A team wanted me to break a tie because the coaches like one guy and the scouts liked another guy, and they wanted me to break a tie. There was another scenario there they all subscribe to our stuff. The coaches get it. The scouts get it. The general managers all subscribe to it. So they look at it. And I think, you know, there might be some points that we have. They say, hey, yeah, that's right. That's what our scouts were seeing. That's what our coaches were seeing. So, you know, because the people in the league know who I am because I've been in the league for a long time. So, usually if I say something, I mean, it's not like I'm grabbing it out of thin air. You know, it's because I studied the tape.
Good stuff as always, Dan. It's here this week. Thanks for doing this.
You bet, you guys. Anytime, and go Titans.
All right. Dan Shonka has been in those rooms, and now he's with Our Lads Scouting Service. Go check out his work at OurLads.com. They peak. They look.
I don't know how you avoid it at this point because it's everywhere.
It is.
I do think it's fascinating, though, to go inside the room there to see the jockeying back and forth this week as you get ready. And then, frankly, on draft night, and I think that's more the case this year with the Titans because, let's face it, for the last so many years, they picked high enough and they had such obvious needs. You know, we need to draft a quarterback. We need to draft a tackle, cornerback, whatever, that it was kind of easy to do the mock drafts. That it was like, well, they're either going to take Jameis Winston or Marcus Mariota, whoever's there. Or, you know, they're going to take a right tackle or a left tackle or whatever the case may be. This year, I mean, I think it's going to be defense. I think it's going to be a guy with a pass rushing background. But, you know, if a lot of those chips fall off the board and that guy's not there at 25, what do you do? I think it's going to be really interesting to see how this year's draft plays out from the Titans' perspective because it's uncharted territory, really.
Yeah, no doubt. By the way, also Metro Police Department announcing they will hold a news conference about the Waffle House shooting at 11:40 this morning. So I don't know if there's new news on that front, but they are scheduled to have
hopefully
a press conference in about 20 minutes. We'll come back with more on Darren and Donick next on 102.5 The Game.
Here comes the sun. Here comes the sun. And I say it's all right.
Coming up at noon, we'll head out to East Tennessee. We'll check into Knoxville. We do that every Monday at noon. Vince Ferrara, WNML. Of course, the Vols had their spring game, like everybody. We had a baseball game. We actually played on Saturday. It's actually nice on Saturday.
Got it in. Yeah. I hope you played a doubleheader to get ahead of the curve.
We should have played a tripleheader on Saturday. But we all had some people show up to my son's game, and we all went out to lunch afterwards, and we walked in to this barbecue joint, and they've got a lot of TVs, and I saw the Alabama spring game, I saw the Georgia spring game, so everybody's playing their spring games, and of course, Tennessee had
theirs. Did you
theirs.
Judge all their crowds like some coaches do?
Okay, let's talk about that for just a second, because we'll get into that with Vince. I've got to be honest. This is very, very early impressions. Just me stepping back and looking at and being around coaches for a long time in this business. Mike Vrabel and Jeremy Pruitt have got off to a little bit awkward starts for me as brand new head coaches. And maybe that's the key phrase, brand new head coaches. So maybe they should be given some passes, maybe some mulligans, like I always ask for when I go to charity golf tournaments. Hey, where's your mulligan table? I need mulligans. Can you give me a hat load of mulligans? Here's my hat. Drop some mulligan passes in there because I need them. Maybe they deserve mulligans. But I got to be honest, some really strange starts for two coaches that have never been head coaches, have not played a game yet, and they're in the very, very early stages. This is the early, just way off season, not even close. It's not like the regular season is just around the corner. And, you know, you had the
Mike Vrabel. It's the honeymoon right now.
This is very much the honeymoon phase. And everything should be great. And Mike Vrabel's little outburst that we talked about over there concerning signs in the building. And now Jeremy Pruitt calling out the fan base for not showing up to the spring game whenever they had what? What did they announce?
65,000.
And he's like, I don't know where the rest of you guys were. I mean, what?
It's unbelievable.
I just shook my head. What did you do?
I shook my head. I heard some people justify it as he's coming from a championship program and he knows what that looks like, and so he's striving to make everything about Tennessee look like a championship program, which is what he's used to, and that's part of the deal. And I kind of get that, but let's be real here. If there's one thing that hasn't been toxic or hasn't been a problem for Tennessee football, it's the fact that the fans love Tennessee football, and that when you play an actual game, that they're going to show up 100,000 strong against whoever you're playing against, and they're going to cheer. And there's some pressure to come with that. You know, sometimes the love of Tennessee fan isn't always the most healthy thing for that program at times. But when it comes to just simple support of the team and showing up on Saturday and cheering you on, they're as good as any fan base in the country at that. And for him to call them out in that setting, I just seemed very odd to me. And the other thing, and we were talking about this through the break, there are two things in this job. I love basically everything about covering sports. Everything. Every sport, all the drama, all the stories, all that. There's two things I don't care a whole lot about. Recruiting and draft stories before they happen. It's hard for me to get excited about people who aren't on the team before they're on the team. And then the second thing is spring football. It's really hard for me to get excited about a season. We've created a season for this that actually has no games and has no meaning
it's
when you get to the fall.
Practice.
It is just extra practice.
Glorified practice.
It is extra practice. And so that orange and white game wasn't a game. It was a scrimmage. It was a scrimmage between the same team, just like they do every other day of practice. And they got 65,000 people to show up.
Now, that's what they announced.
Sure.
Now, a lot of people, if you read
but
the
reports,
people
who were there.
There weren't 65,000.
Even people who were there, I think, would tell you that it was at least 50.
Yeah.
Which 50,000 people for a practice is a ton of people.
It's pretty good, huh?
And for the coach to sit there and say that's not good enough, I don't know.
These are his words, Jeremy Pruitt. I think we all need to look in the mirror and see who we want to be. If we're keeping this real, Jeremy Pruitt, you may have come from Tuscaloosa, but you don't have any skins on the wall, my friend. This is your first job as a head coach in Division I football. You do not have any skins on the wall.
Just as many wins as you and I do.
Right. Just because you came from the Saban tree doesn't mean you have earned the right to have 100,000 at the spring game just because you came from Alabama. I got news from him. That's not how it works. How about, like you said, how about you actually put some skins on the wall, have a tremendous season, and, oh, by the way, they'll be there. Hey, coach, they'll be there. That's still a pretty darn good crowd. They've gone through a lot over the last decade. I don't know if you've gone back and tracked the history of the program. There was a real good 20-year run, and then the last decade has been like, what the heck has just happened? You know, they've had every reason to jump ship and go the other direction and say, yeah, let me know whenever you're good again. They have every reason, every right to do that. They still haven't done it. They supported Butch Jones almost to a fault till the end. Mm-hmm. They just had their worst season ever. 4 wins. And you're calling them, we need to look in the mirror and see who we want to be? What?
I don't get the messaging.
You talking about bizarro land.
Frankly, you could have Alabama's track record, and you could have six national titles or whatever it is in the last decade, and I still wouldn't be interested in your spring game because it's a spring practice. I still wouldn't be interested. Nothing against the 90,000 who show up in Tuscaloosa, but I wouldn't be interested. I'm far more interested in the Stanley Cup playoffs and things like that this time of year. So the idea that Tennessee doesn't have that track record and hasn't won a national title in now two decades, and they still get 50-plus, announcing 65,000, how dare you walk in there and call out the fans on that?
I think that is a bad first step for Jeremy Pruitt, in my opinion. Let's go to Colin in Franklin. Colin, what's up?
Hey, guys. 2 points I'd like to make about Vrabel and Pruitt. With the Vrabel thing, a reporter who is also on another radio station has already said that he had pulled out his phone and was filming what was going on, and that's what Vrabel was referring to when he had that.
Hold on. That was in a media – it was a media press conference where that happened, where our camera at News Channel 5 and every other station's camera was there. It wasn't like the room or the questions or anything were off the record. That was a completely on-the-record setting in a room that they hold every press conference that they ever do in. So, I mean, literally nothing there was off the record. So why does it matter if a reporter or anyone pulls out their phone or, I mean, does anything? Everything in that room was on the record and able to be recorded.
Yeah, I mean, I get all of that, and I wasn't there, so I don't know. I just know how it was explained by this reporter who was talking about it. That's the reason that Vrabel commented on it, is from what I gathered from what he said.
I know where you're going with this, Colin. I think where I'm at, and I when we talked about this and we discussed this on the show, this is a conversation you have behind the scenes with your media relations department.
Yeah, I agree. Okay? I think so, too.
If you have rules, you have every right as the head coach in the NFL to have your rules, your own rules, okay? And they may be different from the past coaches in that building. You are allowed to have your own set of rules. You have those rules behind the scenes. And then the media relations department then passes it along to the media. Like, this is what you can and you cannot do. It's not something you do typically in a press conference.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. I do. But that, like I said, that's the way that it come, how he explained it and how I heard it. I wasn't there, so I don't know. That's how it was explained. But as far as Pruitt goes, Pruitt talked about the fan base being kind of like the team. You know, some were there, and that was good. And some players showed up to play. That was good. Some had legitimate reasons to not be there. But the ones who could have been there, where were they at? And it's kind of like some of these players who he said flat out quit on him. And I think that's where it all stemmed from, is him seeing some of his players quit on him. So he was ticked off about all of that. But as far as the fan base, I'm glad that we have a coach that is not going to settle for second best in anything.
But all right, but you don't want to see it first? I mean, look, you're going down a dangerous path when you've accomplished nothing as a head coach, and I mean nothing, other than it's the honeymoon phase. I get it. Everything looks great in the honeymoon phase. But you're going down a dangerous path, Colin, calling out the fan base, which is a very loyal and huge fan base. And your players already?
I just didn't see it as in calling out the fan base.
Well, I understand. You're saying he's making comparisons to his players, too. Okay, but I also said, and calling out your players. I mean, you're calling out your players in spring practice and the fan base at a spring game? We're in April.
It just don't matter to him if it was spring practice. He wants everyone ready to play. It don't matter if it's practice, if it's a spring game, if it's a game. It don't matter if it's a pickup game. He wants to win and compete at the highest level, and I love that.
Well, I fully support wanting guys to compete. I'm not sure going after your players 3 weeks into the job of practice is the best way to do that. I mean, he's still in the process of winning over these guys and making them believe in what he's doing, and if you call out certain people, we'll see. I mean, that's one of those things that either works great and you sort of get rid of bad apples and you get everybody else going in the same direction, or it can backfire on a coach, and we'll see what happens there. But to equate it to the fans, to me, I just don't see what benefit you get from doing that. It is spring practice. You win zero games by the attendance numbers in your spring practice, and to somehow call out the fan base or ask, say, you better have a reason. You better have a doctor's note why you weren't here today. I just don't think that flies.
What kind of season do you think, honestly, they're going to have this year, Colin, in your opinion? What do you think the final record is going to be?
I don't think it'd be much better than maybe 6-6.
Yeah,
go to
me
a bowl
too.
Game.
Yeah, okay.
If we can stay healthy, I mean, we can compete in these games, because I think there's talent there and he's bringing talent in, but we've got to be able to stay healthy. But and another thing, as far as Pruitt's attitude, can ever keep those thought of that we are just getting rid of Butch Jones, who would have been thrilled with everything that happened Saturday, would have spun it to be the greatest thing ever when, you know, his defense, when Pruitt's defense looked like garbage and he wasn't happy.
Right.
And it's just a different type of mentality. I've been a Tennessee fan since the 86 Sugar Bowl, and I have loved that team, and I have paid for that team. I've loved them. But, I mean, coming from Butch Jones to Jeremy Pruitt, yes, he knows what championship mentality looks like. And him, his coaches, his players, his secretary, all the way down to the guy who sweeps the floor at Neyland, he's not going to settle for anything but the best, period.
Okay. Hey, Colin, thank you for the phone call.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I love his passion there. But if we're all in agreements, and I've said this on the show, and I've said this to Vince, who will join us at noon. 6-6 to me, there's nothing to be disappointed. Like, you should hang your head up high. 6-6, I think, is going to be a good season, this team first year.
Oh, if he gets him to a bowl game in his first year, congratulations.
Overachieved.
And then there'll be some excitement. I mean, he wants to compare him to Butch right there. If we're going to do that, Butch Jones won a heck of a lot more football games as a head coach before he took the Tennessee job than Jeremy Pruitt has. So, you know, you talk about he's seen it.
If the bar is 6-6, man, that's – I mean, I understand for the obvious reasons. Look, there's a lot of turnover, and it's just not – right now, it's not in the cards for them to be good right away. The cupboard is not full and stacked. But if that's realistic, if this is a 5-7, 6-6, 7-5 type of year – do you really want to go down that road this early?
But
if that's what you're looking at?
But especially if you're in that spot, you need everybody to grab their oar and start rowing in the right direction. And
wait a minute, they got rid of Butch. You don't have to do that. They got rid of Butch.
But to go in and talk about players quitting on you in the spring and go to this fan play, go win games. If you didn't like what you saw from the defense or the performance on Saturday, say, you know what? There were some good things today, but we've got a long ways to go. This is just spring ball, and that's on me. And that's on our coaching staff to get these guys to where it was. It felt like a coach who, yeah, he was frustrated by what he saw on Saturday, but it felt like a coach who was throwing guys on his team under the bus a little bit, and then he was throwing the fan base under the bus. And you've been on the job for 5 months. Let's see what you actually do. Let's get to the real football season and see what your team looks like. And, oh, by the way, let's see 102,450 or whatever it is in the stands, because I guarantee you they're going to be there when the game actually counts.
Back to wrap up the second hour next. Don Aaron right now speaking on the behalf of the Metro Police Department. He is their spokesman. 160 law enforcement officials are looking for Travis Reinking.
No sightings, though.
No sightings yet. They did, and we were trying to piece all this together during the break. It does look like he stole a BMW last week in Brentwood, and it was recovered later at his apartment complex.
Someone also found...
was stolen from a dealership, a BMW dealership.
Someone also found a case for a laptop belonging
yes.
to him, but that's it.
Yeah, so still don't have him in custody. If we hear any more details, certainly we will pass that along. Let's go to Scott in Franklin. Scott, what's up?
Yes, sir. Long time listener, first time caller.
Well, welcome.
Yes, well, thank you. And I think maybe I've got a little bit of different of a spin. I'm not a Tennessee native, but I've been here long enough to I think, get the pulse of the Tennessee fan base anyway. My opinion, and it's just an opinion, is that the Tennessee fan base has wanted something of the good old days to return. And based upon the fan base that I interact with, it was pretty much what you guys have described, a hard-nosed coach that called it like it was. And my position is, if you're going to attract what the Tennessee fan base thinks they attract, which is players from across the country, and they're going to continue to be able to be supported by a fan base that the Tennessee fan base believes is national, then you're going to have a no-nonsense coach to drive a no-nonsense program to wherever it is that the Tennessee fan base sees their destination in being. That's my opinion, and while it might have been a little questionable, I would say that the new coach is dealing with the old coach's player base, and according to what I interact with in terms of the Tennessee fan base, that player base just wasn't championship level or championship ready. And I guess, you know, if you want what it is that you want, then you're going to have to do what it is you haven't done before, and that, or what you've done 20 years ago. You got to get after it, and you got to get after it hard. And if you don't want to be here, you need to go. And my final comment is, if you guys really don't want the coach, we'll take him back. That kind of tells you the fan base that I support. But we'll be glad to have him back. Saban will retire at some point in time. But hopefully this different perspective will kind of give you guys a maybe a little different look at it. Anyway.
Okay.
I appreciate you taking the call.
Thank you, Scott. Look, I understand going in a different direction. I get it. You had Butch Jones, coach speak, didn't develop – had no – the recruiting was not an issue whatsoever. Did he also get the fan base back? Did he get the formers back? Did Butch Jones do a lot of good? He did, because Derek Dooley left it in a hot, steamy mess. I mean, Derek Dooley was a disaster. He was the Billy Gillespie, Ken Whisenhunt of Titans and Kentucky programs and franchises. It was a mess. So Butch Jones did a lot of good, but he couldn't develop the talent. He wasn't exactly a very good game day coach. He gave the coach speak. He didn't say anything. Don't think he handled things differently. You couldn't really get a real answer out of him. So if you're looking for something totally different, okay, I get that. He's totally different. Jeremy Pruitt is going to approach things and take things completely different than Butch Jones did. But right now, today, Steve, that does not equal any more wins. It does not equal any more success than what they endured under the watch of Butch Jones. Now, if it turns out to be that way, then it's all worth it. I think, going back to our discussion, it's dangerous to go down a road of already calling out. Whether you want to be and look and feel like Alabama's program, I think to me, first you have to do that before you can start talking and preaching those type of words. You can't just come in from day one and say, hey, I came from the Saban tree, or Vrabel, I came from the Belichick tree. I've been there, done it. I've seen it. I've been the core of it. I understand it. And so now we're going to act just like that. That sounds nice, but until you actually do it, I don't think you can really act like you're those programs. You're not the Patriots, and you're not Alabama until you prove it.
You know what I've never heard Bill Belichick say in a press conference? Do you guys go snooping around in our locker room? You know what I've never heard Nick Saban say ever? Anything about the crowd at the spring game. Or that it matters.
Although he has called out the crowd before. Remember leaving blowout games early?
Sure.
And they stopped doing that. But guess what? He had the skins on the wall at that point.
At that point, absolutely. But the other part of that is you want to say that these are no-nonsense guys, that they're coming in and they're establishing their thing. Isn't talking about the spring game crowd or a slogan on the wall and what people can photograph and can't in what is an open forum at a media session, isn't that the very definition of nonsense? You don't win anything by keeping that secret. You don't win anything by calling out your fan base. Nothing is accomplished there other than wasted energy and time. And now people are talking about it today. And I don't think this is the good type of talk. I mean, sometimes you subscribe to any publicity as good publicity. I don't think this is particularly good publicity for Jeremy Pruitt or for the Tennessee fan base right now.
I get it. Jeremy Pruitt and Mike Vrabel are totally different than the previous coaches, right?
100%.
Their attitude, the way they approach it, is completely different. And maybe that's refreshing to a lot of people, and that already is a good start. And that may be fine. It may turn out to be the right mentality to have. Maybe that's what you want your coach to be, and it leads to a lot of wins. But for me, until that happens, I can't get on board of jumping on the media for a sign in a building, in an open public setting, a press conference setting. I can't be on board of a coach calling out the fans, which they announced 65,000 at a practice. Now, like I said, there weren't 65,000 there, but that's what they announced. When you haven't done anything yet, just because you came from a tree, just because you came from winning, it hasn't translated yet. Maybe it does. Then everybody will really embrace that mentality. But for me, I'd like to see a little body of work first before you start going down all these roads that Saban and Belichick, they can get away with all of this because they have all the skins on the wall and they have the trophies back it up. They can literally say or do anything.
Absolutely. But I think they choose to not say and do certain things in areas that just simply don't matter. And here's a good example. You say go in and change it, make it part of your culture and your program. Mike Vrabel is completely changing up practice structure in terms of how they're going to organize things. Essentially, ever since the Titans have been here, they practice, then the head coach speaks, they may bring somebody else to the podium or the banner outside, and then the locker room's open. Mike Vrabel is changing things up to make it more like, I believe, the New England way, and he's going to speak before every practice. And then you're going to have your little open period for the media, then you're going to have to leave, and then when practice is over, then you'll have your player availability. That's how it's going to go. He believes that's the best way to do it. That's how he wants to do it. That is completely his right, and that makes sense because it's a football thing. To be in a press conference setting and somebody ask about the picture that's above his head, basically, on the wall, the slogan, which is very clearly his because it's new and he's the new coach, and to go off on the tangent about signs in the building and taking pictures and snooping in the locker room, that serves no purpose. It doesn't make his team better. It doesn't make his mission stronger. Doesn't speak to his influence. It's just petty, and it's nonsense, and it doesn't help anything. And that's the whole point. Guys, come in. Establish your culture. Change things up. Do anything you want that you think makes the football team better, but be careful of being the micromanager that wants to change the Monday order in the lunchroom because ultimately that doesn't matter.
Good point. That'll do it for hour number two. We'll come back. We'll head to Knoxville. We'll bring in Vince Ferrara. He joins us every Monday at noon from WNML in Knoxville. We'll do that next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.